The Digital Lifestyle presents TDM Mobile, show number 94 for Thursday, November 10th, 2011. I'm Jose Ortiz.
I'm John Dickinson.
And I'm Jason Coombs.
Sheldon-less again today.
Yeah, unfortunately. I
haven't let him out of his box yet for using his iPhone.
He's actually been using his Windows phone lately, I've noticed.
Yeah, he has actually. Yeah, he has.
So maybe your threat scared him too much.
Well, yeah. I have to make sure the brainwashing is stuck before I let him back out into the public.
You got an app for that.
Yeah, we could have the Sheldon app.
Or just the Windows Phone 7 brainwashing app. It's like one of those hypnotizing spirals or something that says, you do love Windows Phone.
Yeah. All right, so let's get right into it. We'll kick it off with some the news at the moment is iOS 5.0.1 is out, which addresses the battery issues that Apple caught to last week. But on top of that, if you have the original iPad, which John, you and I both have, we actually get multitasking gestures, documents in the cloud, and some additional bug fixes.
Yeah.
And apparently Australian accents should also be better understood using the diction feature in iOS. Dictation feature, sorry.
Cool, yeah. I mean, it literally just started coming down, hasn't it? So I think they released it around 6 PM GMT or whatever we're on now. Yeah, it's GMT, isn't it? I was getting confused with the different times. But yeah, that's literally just come down. And
marks quite a milestone, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, I know we speculated back when iOS 5 dropped about you know, would Apple get it right with the over-the-air updates? And, you know, so far, that would be a resounding yes, really. I mean, all the tweets that I've read have pointed towards everyone having no problems. I know myself, I was just lying on the couch watching TV and noticed the tweets coming through. I didn't actually get a notification for it. I don't know, did you get a notification for yours, Jose?
No, I was about to ask you the same thing. That's one thing that surprises me. I think you know, we knew just because of, you know, of course, Twitter always gets flooded when something, Apple does something, when an Apple update comes out. So I kind of, and I haven't actually performed the update yet. I figured I'd do it on the air, kind of like I did with the Windows Phone 7 Mango update. But no notification. I had to actually go to the settings and check for the software update.
I did do the same.
I mean, that's disappointing. I would expect some type of notification, some type of push notification.
What do you think, considering notifications were such a big addition to iOS 5, they go, hey, you know, we can use notifications now.
Do you think that was a conscious decision in terms of trying to just throttle it slightly, kind of naturally?
It could be.
Maybe they make the update available for everyone immediately, and it could be that the way they were going to do it was, you know, send out notifications in layers, even though it's always been available if you check manually.
Yeah. Could well.
Any rough idea how big the download was?
It is 39.2 megabytes.
Yes. Yeah, okay. Fairly small one.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, it ran perfectly fine on mine. Hit the check for updates. Well, I didn't even have to check for updates really. It was just there when I went into the software updates section under the general settings tab, and hit download and install, off it popped, probably a few minutes to download it, and then it asked me to plug in the charger. I don't know whether that was you have to plug in the charger or we advise you to plug in the charger or not, I'm not sure, but I did anyway. and it verified the download, and then stuck it into the update mode, where it comes up with like the apple and the little bar that goes across. And a few minutes later, reset, and all updated. Probably took about 10 minutes end to end. So it's pretty good, painless. Didn't have to get off the couch. It's brilliant. It's how updates should be.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and I'm running the update now. It's already downloaded, and it's preparing update right now. So we'll see how long it takes.
Yeah, so I mean, I haven't had a chance to play with any of the new features yet. I think, you know, when we spoke on last week's show, I wasn't really noticing any disadvantage in battery life so much with the update. So I'm not sure how much better it'll be now. I'll certainly, you know, be paying a close attention to it over the next sort of, you know, week, and see what goes on. But yeah, I'm going to have a go with those gestures after the show. I've left the iPad in the other room charging at the minute, so it's kind of a go while we're on air. But yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what it brings. And you know, it's definitely, I mean, for me, it's more the it, like testing out the update process, the over-the-air update process. And you know, after not really having an over-the-update experience before, because I've never had an official Android, I've only ever had the hacked HD2, which is not able to get updates without reflashing anyway. So just having that experience of managing to do an over-the-air update was a breath of fresh air, really. It was nice. It was a good experience.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely nice to not have to launch iTunes and, you know, have to go through that whole process. That was really my biggest concern, I can't stand iTunes. Every time I opened iTunes, it said I needed to update iTunes or
anything that separates you from iTunes is
yes
the better, in my opinion.
Yes.
Well, with these, that's something actually I thought about when I was doing the update, and I was thinking about, can you completely separate yourself from iTunes now? So if I went and bought an iPad, do I still need to hook it up to iTunes to activate it, even on iOS 5?
You don't, actually.
You don't. So you can completely separate yourself from the computer. You can go and buy an iPad now, and you don't have to own a computer.
Well, I have a little update on my friend that would not open up his iPhone 4S. We'll call him Jason 2. he finally set up his phone yesterday.
After about, what was that, 3 weeks? 2 weeks?
A couple weeks at least. Now here's the problem. The phone he was upgrading from was an iPhone 3G, and I guess he never really synced it with his iTunes too much. And what he wanted to do was, of course, back up his iPhone 3G so he can restore all the data, you know, the contacts, the pictures, all that stuff, to the new iPhone 4S. Well, here he goes. You know, he hooks up the iPhone 3G to iTunes, does a backup. And another friend of mine is actually helping them do the stuff. And then they set up the iPhone 4S. They're able to set it up without hooking it up to iTunes. However, iTunes is where the backup is, right? So he needs to hook it up to iTunes in order to restore his contacts. And contacts was his main concern. But his contacts, email settings, and all that stuff. So here he goes. He hooks up his iPhone 4S to his MacBook Pro, and he can't the MacBook won't recognize the iPhone 4S because iTunes need to be updated, and then the new version of iTunes that needs to be updated too does not support OS X Tiger, which is what he has.
Oh, what?
He needs to get Leopard or Snow Leopard.
Oh,
now, I thought this was hilarious, because you're telling me that. And another friend of mine encountered this a couple years ago as well. But you're telling me that Apple doesn't support iTunes beyond Tiger. I mean, I guess apparently Tiger's pretty old now. I didn't realize this. But still, I don't understand what iTunes does, the new iTunes does, that wouldn't be able to operate on OS X Tiger.
Yeah, you think that it would at least be able to run on it.
Yeah.
With limited functionality or something like that, but.
Yeah, I don't know. It's odd. And initially I was thinking, okay, well, maybe it's still the old, processors, you know, the pre-Intel MacBook. Yeah. But that wasn't the case at all. It's the MacBook that my friend has is, I guess it's the first gen MacBook that actually had Intel processors in it.
Right.
So there's nothing at the core that would be different. So I'm not sure. I just thought that was hilarious. So, in order to get his context, so our mutual friend, he came over and I have this SIM cutting tool, right? So he came over to borrow it just to cut the SIM. And, you know, he explained to me what was going on and they can't get the contacts and he wants to avoid having to put the contacts in. Funny, we were talking about types of emails being used before the show because this guy, the iPhone 4S owner, he his email address, he still uses AOL as his email provider.
Oh no.
Yeah. So his contacts, they're just stored on the iPhone. They're not synced to any cloud service that he can download them to or anything like that. They were just on his iPhone. Which is a big no-no, as we all know.
Yeah.
But so my friends, you know, stuck is like, I don't know how I'm gonna get the contacts on there for him. So I tell him, you know what? Just export the address book from iTunes as a CSV file and upload it to like Gmail, create a Gmail account for him, upload it to Gmail, and then just on the iPhone 4S, set up Gmail and only sync the contacts, sync them back down to the phone. There you go, done. And I guess this guy didn't, for whatever reason, didn't want to sign up for an account, you know, a Gmail account or any other email service. And you know, so I told him, just do it for him. He's just lazy, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what he ended up doing. That's how he got the contacts, but they still want to install Leopard on the MacBook Pro because he wants to sync up, I guess, pictures or something. I don't know what else he wants to sync up. But it was interesting to me that, you know, he ran into so many issues. But in reality, he didn't really need the MacBook, to hook it up to anything. He could have just set it up had he been signed up to or been using the proper services, right? So whether it was Gmail or even Yahoo or whatever other cloud service that would allow him to just sync his contacts and his information back down rather than having to store it on a desktop or laptop.
I mean, was he running iOS 5 on his 3GS?
No. No,
because he could have used iCloud services to do
that's what I was saying too.
What it needed, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I said too. But he wasn't running iCloud on that. Yeah, because I said, you know, use Yahoo or iCloud or. Well, I told him iCloud because regardless, he had to sign up for an iCloud account.
Yeah. Yeah, as soon as he did iOS 5, he'd have to do it anyway, so.
And I don't know if you can upload something manually to iCloud through the web or if it had to sync to a device, so. But he has his iPhone 4S working and, you know, he's actually using it after having it there for a few weeks.
Cool. Yeah. So, it's all good. So keep thinking about picking up one of those, 4S's, but, it's a tempting price, but, still not sure yet.
Yeah, definitely. All right. We got, couple other items for iOS. Well, this one is iOS and Android, actually, talking about gaming revenue and how it breaks out. And they were comparing it to revenue from dedicated, portable players such as the Sony PSP or the Nintendo 3DS. And it looks like Android and WebOS no longer dominate just the playing time aspect of it. It also dominates the revenue, taking 58% of income for all portable game software during this year came from iOS and Android rather than the dedicated mobile platforms.
Well, that's a real shift, isn't it? It's, you know, that's just really showing the how much game developers now are really investing in mobile platforms now. As opposed to just looking at, you know, dedicated gaming devices. which, you know, it makes sense, really, because you've got the phone devices which are capable of running these, you know, so kind of high-end mobile games. And they're in a phone which people are carrying around anyway, so they don't have to carry around a separate device.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I'm not a big gamer, phone gamer, but I have noticed that lately I'll pick up, rather than, you know, constantly be checking out new games, I will have a couple of games that I go to when I'm, you know, waiting for in line or you know, for something just to kill some time. But lately I've been playing Dragonfly. It's just a stupid little side scroller game. But more recently I've been playing this little game on Android called Seven Little Words.
Okay.
And it's cool. It's just, it gives you combinations of letters and it gives you clues for seven different words, tells you how many letters each one of those words is. And based on those clues, you have to figure out what the word is. Kind of like crossword puzzle minus the crosswords, and they give you letters.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, those little puzzle games are really, you know, they're really the great games for you. And you, on the one hand, you've got these high-end, like graphic games and stuff for the mobile platforms. But then you've got these simple little games like, you know, like that, like Words with Friends and that kind of thing, which are real simple to develop, I'm guessing. I'm not a developer, so. And, you know, really effective, and they just work so well on the mobile platform.
Yep. Yeah. So,
I mean, I'm the same. I'm not really a massive mobile gamer. I'm not really a massive non-mobile gamer, really. I've got my Xbox and things like that, which I play on, you know, maybe once or twice a week, but, you know, I don't get a lot of time these days for gaming, but I do like those little games, and it still amuses me every time, because I do a lot of travelling around. It still amuses me that I see so many people on the train with playing Angry Birds. So every I don't think I've been on a train journey in the last few weeks where I haven't seen at least one person playing Angry Birds. That must be like, you know, 50 out of 58% revenue taking just that.
You know, I was just in Boston, actually a few days ago. I was still in Boston, and on the train, now that I think about it, I didn't really see anybody playing games. Most people were just, you know, with listening to music. They had their headphones on and listening to music. But a lot of them were listening to music on their smartphone, so. Maybe Boston just isn't. I mean, Boston's a college town, so maybe they got too much going on to play games.
Yeah, possibly. Don't know. But yeah, I don't know. It's quite interesting. It's interesting the level of age groups as well. You know, I witnessed everything from like middle aged men and women to right down to kids playing Angry Birds. It's kind of like, you know, a multi generational appeal.
Yeah, definitely.
I've had a bizarre conversation yesterday. I was in a Tesco store and was running around the gadgets and stuff as you do, and some teenagers kind of came into the phone section. They're going, "Oh wow, look at the BlackBerries!"
No.
Just quite a strange obsession.
Yeah, they love it. I heard one at the train station the other day going on about BBM, and I was just like, "Oh, why? Why are you doing it? It's not big and it's not clever. It's just broken." Because didn't it break again the other day?
I was just going to say that. I think I caught a few tweets, but I wasn't sure if it was just just kind of people thinking it was down, but I think
it actually did go down for a short while. Certain services in certain places did again. Nothing on the scale of last time. I think it was just a minor glitch, but it got noticed.
Maybe that's why Google are ending their support for the Gmail app. they see it as a dying platform.
Quite possibly.
Yeah. One more story for Apple. This one not so pleasant, but I guess there was a developer, iOS developer Charlie Miller, who discovered a bug in the iOS code. and he told Apple about it, but not until after he had submitted an app to the App Store that took advantage of that bug. And Apple subsequently basically banned Charlie Miller from the developer program. Now, initially, you're thinking, okay, well, there's Apple again, you know, being all tight. This guy alerted them to a bug, and this is the thanks he gets when, you know, they should appreciate developers and anybody that really says, hey, look, there's a security hole in your software. But I think it's the way he went about it that was kind of iffy, right? So rather than find it and make them aware of it, he actually developed an app that took advantage of this security hole, which, you know, anybody that downloaded the app could have then been vulnerable to whatever attacks, Trojan attacks, the security hole presented. So it's the manner that he went about it that's kind of iffy.
It's weird, isn't it? Because you think you're either going to go for one or the other option. You're either going to write the app, keep your mouth shut, and, you know, let your app do what your app was intended to do, or you're going to let Apple know, like the Good Samaritan.
Yep.
You're not going to do both. That's just bizarre.
No, I mean, I could kind of get taking that approach. If you reported it as an issue and, you know, over a period of months, new versions of iOS came out and they weren't giving you any attention, then, you know, you might want to make the thing public. But
yeah, it's a point.
It just seems a bit odd to reveal the issue by publishing an app and then go, look what I've done. But
yeah, so interesting. I mean, I think the slant that the story was getting, especially the headline, was trying to, you know, take a jab at Apple and say, hey, you know, again, take a jab at their policies that they've been criticized before. But in this case, I don't know, you know, it's there's more to the story.
Yeah, I think there's definitely more to it than going on behind the scenes there, because it's obviously, you know, anything like this, you're going to get the Apple fanboys jumping up for Apple on Apple's side, then you're going to get the you know, the haters or whatever jumping on the other side and going, oh, Apple, you're all uptight and all this lot. And it's,
yep,
it's hard for people to stay unbalanced, unbiased, yeah, in those kind of situations. But, yeah, there's definitely something weird going on there.
Yep. Well, it'll definitely generate page views and comments for them, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that about does it for iOS news this week. Jace, you want to take over from here?
Yeah, sure. It's been a pretty slow news week, really. There was some information came out that Microsoft have relaxed the Windows Phone hardware, so similar to iOS, that Microsoft have a stringent set of hardware guidelines that manufacturers have to adhere to. And as Jose says, you know, it's kind of led to a lot of kind of copycat devices in the Windows Phone ecosystem, but they've basically done away with the necessity for a camera, which seems quite an odd concession, given that it's a consumer orientated phone. The only commentary I saw, and I can't remember where I saw it, was that maybe it was to make the phones appeal to businesses that maybe need to give their staff phones that, and you're not allowed a camera inside the premises or something. But it seems a bit of a strange one. I guess the only real reason could be to get the price down.
Yeah, I don't know what, it's an odd move, really, isn't it? I think we were having a bit quick chat about this before we started recording, weren't we? And we were saying, I think it was Jose, you said that it seemed like a step backwards for them, doesn't it? I definitely agree with that. You know, it's like, if you're going to go from, you know, Windows Phone 6, 5, 6 earlier devices where, you know, anything goes kind of thing, and then you've got that whole array of hardware and software variations to move into a standardized platform like Windows Phone 7, you think you're going to stick to that?
Yeah, I guess they are trying to get these devices into markets that demand cheaper and cheaper handsets. So I guess the only thing to do is to get this out. But it does kind of, in a way, kind of fragment the ecosystem. And they're talking about getting rid of the camera. It doesn't have to have a compass, a gyro, or a front-facing camera. And they're all kind of Gen 2 requirements, really.
Yeah, it's definitely a strange move. Why do you think they've kind of relaxed these rules? Apart from obviously, you know, getting into smaller markets, do you think it has anything to do with the tie-ups with Nokia or anything like that? You know, because obviously Nokia are a developer and a lot of these cheaper, lower-end Symbian devices. Do you think they're trying to pitch into that market where they're saying, hey, well, you know, don't do anything with Symbian, get Windows Phone on your cheaper devices as well and give us more royalties?
I mean, I think they're definitely taking a step back from what they said their goal was going to be, right? So initially they want to position Windows Phone as a very high-end, very well-designed and well-executed platform where you can expect consistency across the board. They wanted to avoid the fragmentation problem that has plagued Android. At the same time, Microsoft is not a hardware company, and they wanted to leverage their existing manufacturer relationships and have other manufacturers create these devices and you know, put them out there in the market. And now it seems like they're kind of backpedaling a bit because Windows Phone has not had the penetration that I'm sure they hope it would have. You know, this relationship with Nokia, I mean, we were expecting to see differences, more lax requirements to begin with, right? This was no surprise in terms of Nokia being able to get away with different requirements. But I don't think that that's what pushed it forward in terms of, making it broader for all manufacturers. What I think is going on is that, yes, now they want to reach the lower end markets because they hope that if they reach those markets that they'll be able to see some more penetration than what Windows Phone is currently seeing. Cause I mean, let's be honest, Windows Phone isn't really doing that great in the market. I wish I still had that post, but there was a post that showed the, I think Brian Block actually, did a presentation recently, which showed the market share for, mobile OSs, and of course iOS and Android were dominating, and you know, Windows Phone, Web OS were down there, I think even in single digit percentages. So I think Microsoft is hoping that this will help them penetrate the market and expand their market share, even if it's at the low end. But now what's going to happen is that they're going to risk that fragmentation piece. They're going to risk that premium experience. So it's not going to be where you just pick up a Windows Phone and know that you're getting the best. Now you're going back to the issue where you're going to have to pick up a Windows Phone and really check the specs, make sure that it has that, you know, front-facing camera, that 8-megapixel camera, that it has the gyroscope if you're a gamer. And that's, you know, I don't think that's good. I don't think that's a positive move, especially, you know, given the niche that Microsoft was trying to carve out for itself in this Android and iOS duopoly.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is a slightly worrying move because, like you say, it used to be that developers could, you know, they knew what hardware a device was going to have because the guidelines were pretty strict. There was very few optional items. Whereas now, you know, when somebody's trying to develop an app, they're going to have to think, you know, what might the device not have? I mean, one of the things I need to correct from the show from when we talked about Nokia was I thought the Lumia 800 had a gyroscope, but I've since learned from Chris Walsh that it hasn't. And that's, I've seen a lot of people, and again, obviously these are people like us that expect quite high-end devices, saying, well, you know, I was waiting for the Lumia 800, but actually I'm going to get a Titan, which has got all of the Gen 2 hardware in it. So yeah, I think it is a slightly worrying trend, but I think, like you say, almost kind of a desperation move that they've got to get these devices into as many markets as they can. So, and Nokia is, I guess, well known for its kind of devices that cross a multitude of price points. So, you know, you've only got to look at some point, they're going to want to pitch the Windows Phone devices at the kind of Asha level. So we shall see. But yeah, I think it is a shame really that it's kind of watering down the specs. The next one was just a small story, really. Just, you know, many people talk about Windows Phone needing, you know, kind of key applications. I don't know whether or not Spotify falls into that category, but Microsoft released or announced the availability of Spotify app for Windows Phone this week. I don't know if that's worth talking about.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, you know, Spotify has not long been released in the States. It's been out over here for quite some time now. So obviously, you know, it's getting a lot more PR since going, you know, overseas as well. And I used to be a real big Spotify user. I still do use it on my desktop. I used to be a premium subscriber. When I had my iPhone, I'd use it, you know, on the iPhone and things like that. But since getting my Windows Phone, I've kind of moved everything over to Zune now. With Zune, the Zune Pass is ever so slightly cheaper a month. It integrates with my Windows Phone, pretty much the same as what Spotify did on the iPhone, and on Android before. But also, you know, I've got the likes of, the Zune player for the Xbox, which, you know, I can use all the Zune content in the main room on the theater system on the big speakers. But, yeah, so I don't see a real big market for it anymore. I think I was having a conversation with someone on Twitter the other day, and we were saying that after the initial rush of everyone, you know, wanting to jump on and try it, I can't see it really lasting in popularity stakes anyway. So
I guess it's just one of those kind of ticks in the boxes, isn't it? If you're moving platforms, or you're picking a platform, you're going to pick one that's, you know, got the applications that you want. So
yeah,
so I think it's just about ticking boxes, really.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's definitely there and adds that extra functionality, you know, for Spotify users who don't want to use the Zune functionality on Windows Phone. But I think, you know, if you've invested in the Windows Phone architecture, then in my opinion, you're better off with Zune anyway, using the Zune Pass.
Yeah,
but that's just my personal opinion. So
yeah, I think the only thing it maybe comes back to is the fact that Zune isn't available in all the markets that Windows Phone is. So
that's a very good point.
But then again, I don't know how wide-reaching Spotify is. So
yeah, it's probably, I think the markets where Zune's not available is probably Spotify's not available either. So it's
cool. I think Microsoft must have listened to last week's show when I was saying that I wanted a bigger phone because they've erected a working Windows phone, which is 6 stories high in New York City, which is maybe a little bit too big for me to carry around, but, you know, it's nice thing to do so. But yeah, basically had some big events in New York this week. Really interesting, kind of similar to when Windows Phone launched, that it launched in Europe first, then a few weeks later it launched in the US, and it's kind of followed the same thing where, you know, the Gen 2 devices got launched in the UK a few weeks ago with the Nokia event and everything, and this week they're launching the Titan and the Radar on AT&T, and it's just no new phone for Verizon yet.
No, not yet. Just going back to that giant phone, I think that's a brilliant piece of marketing. Just to create this huge Windows phone in the middle of which park was it? Do you remember?
It was in Herald Square, and it's fully working, live tiles.
So they got, I don't know, I saw a great video online. I think it might have been The Verge that posted it, where they actually got a tour inside it, and they had to just take a look at it, you know, and it's like, they actually, you know, they created all these live tiles out of like millions of screens that were displaying different things. Then ever so often the live tiles would peel back and you'd have a live show in one of the live tiles, or you'd have someone like speaking in one of the live tiles. Brilliant piece of marketing, I think.
Yeah, I think one of the clever things that it was the music tile kind of was moved, and they had a live band playing where the tile would have been. So
yeah,
it's quite clever things like that. I've included a link to the Windows team blog, where they've got a time-lapse video of them actually building the thing, which is quite interesting. But yeah, I mean, it's certainly, we talked about Nokia doing a marketing blitz, but it certainly seems like almost Microsoft was waiting for the Mango and the Gen 2 devices, because the marketing's definitely stepped up a gear, and you can't miss a six-story phone sitting in the middle. And I actually got to try out the Windows Phone app for the Nokia devices that they released for the Symbian devices, and it actually was quite good. It's pretty limited, but then these things always are, but it's still, you know, you kind of got to see how the People Hub worked and got to see how the messaging worked and everything, so it's quite neat.
Oh, cool, yeah, so that was the emulator, wasn't it?
Yeah, so it's not a full emulator, it's kind of flicks between, you can touch a tile and then it kind of links to a video, but like I said, it kind of showed, gave you an impression of what each tile actually was about, kind of thing.
It's quite funny, actually. I just, not funny at all, but just thinking back to an article I saw before, which I don't think we've got in the show notes, so I'll try and find out where it was. But I read somewhere this evening that you've got the ability now for emulators in the marketplace or something for Windows Phone, so you can actually like emulate Android apps and things like that, so you can run Android apps on Windows Phone 7.
I think there was a Nintendo emulator, but I think it got pulled.
I'm sure, I can't remember where I read it now. I literally only read it this evening, somewhere about Android apps being run on Windows Phone 7. I don't know whether it's one of these.
Okay.
It might be one of these hacks that you can get off XDA or something now that the phones are, you know, the ability to unlock, which with the Chevron WV7, which we'll come on to in a minute. So it might be one of the hacks there, something you can sideload on, I'm not sure. I seem to recall it saying it's something about the market though, so.
Okay. Yeah, because again, I don't think emulators are allowed, but it might be depending on what it's emulating that
yeah.
It's been.
I'll try and dig that out, see if I can find it.
Well, since you mentioned the Chevron WP7 tool, we might as well talk about that. When Windows Phone originally came out, you could pay $100 and get them developer unlocked. And the way that worked was by uploading a certificate onto the phone. And Chris Walsh and Ravi Riviera and I just can't remember if it was Longzeng or not. I don't think it was. But yeah, sorry, it was Longzeng, wasn't it? But yeah, basically they managed to anyone could developer unlock a phone, and Microsoft kind of asked them to desist, which they did. But then they got together and started some talks, and now there's an official supported Chevron WP7, which for $10 will unlock a phone exactly like the developer unlock. The difference is that you can't submit apps into the marketplace. So it's a good way for people to be able to dabble around with development like yourself, John, and then actually be able to put the app onto their phone. There is some potential security issues which Microsoft are working on, in that it's possible to download any ZAP file from the marketplace, and using Chevron WP7 unlocked, you could kind of basically, it's possible to get hold of an app and not pay for it and then upload it onto your phone. But Microsoft are now with Mango supporting encrypted apps. I think they're waiting until there's a significant number of Mango phones being updated before they kind of throw the switch on that. But yeah, I think it's good that Microsoft are working with the developer community, because I know, you know, one of the things that Jose is keen on is, you know, from his background, is being able to sideload apps and everything like that. So I think it's interesting that Microsoft are working with developers rather than working against them. Like, you know, for example, you know, with Apple, they don't let you sideload apps, which is why the whole jailbreak community's sprung up. And Rafael was quick to point out on Twitter yesterday that, you know, Chevron WP7 isn't a jailbreak; it's an official supported unlock.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm just a bit shocked when you're saying a minute ago about Jose and sideloading. Doesn't that mean you've got to plug your phone into a computer? No, but it is a good move, because I mean we mentioned this before, didn't we? When they first leaked, and it has taken them a long time to get to this point where they're you know, ready to release this officially release this the tool, and we talked about it when they were first you know, they first announced the tie with Microsoft and everything a while back.
Mm.
And it was something that I was definitely keen to get my hands on. Luckily for me, a few weeks ago I got a free app hub account and developer unlocked through DreamSpark for being a student anyway. So not that I'm a part-time student, I'm a mature student. But
did you say immature student?
Immature student. But no, so mine's already unlocked, so I'm obviously not going to take advantage of that. But you know, it was something that I was eagerly awaiting for, because I have been learning some like C# and stuff and a bit of Windows Phone development. But it's a cool tool, you know. It allows you to unlock your device, have a hack around with it, and just makes that platform a little bit more open. But yeah, It's a strange move again, because, I mean, like, going back to what we were talking about before about the spec changes. They were particularly talking initially when Windows Phone first came out, you know, it's going to be a more of a lockdown platform, very much more like Apple, set hardware specifications. And now within the space of a couple of weeks, you know, we've got unlocked devices, people hacking around with it, spec, whatever you want. It's kind of like completely taking a U-turn on it, really, hasn't it? The whole ethos of what they were going for with Windows Phone 7.
Yeah, I think the Chevron WP7 tool kind of arose from, you know, people trying to get more developers encouraged into writing for the platform without having to pay the $100, and also, you know, the ability for people to be able to do a bit more with their phones. So, but yeah, I think, like you say, the hardware stuff is a concern.
Yeah, I definitely think it's different than the hardware stuff, because this is very much optional, right? You have to be in the know to realize that this tool is out there and to want to do the development and whatnot, whereas with the hardware, you don't have the choice. It's going to be whatever the manufacturers put out there, and now you have to be aware of what phone you're picking up rather than just picking up a Windows phone. So I think there is a difference here, but it's definitely nice to see Microsoft working with developers rather than against them, rather than to, you know, try to shut them out, because Microsoft could have very easily found some type of software, temporary software fix, pushed it out as an update, and blocked that off, right? Instead, they reached out to these guys, to this team, you know, obviously got them working together with Microsoft, and this is the result of it. So definitely nice to see some developer outreach there.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah, exactly. And then of course, with all these phones that have got very, very quality of hardware, so not quality, but various different hardware configurations, which gets even more confused by the carriers all giving them different names. And before you know where you are, you're dealing with a list of 100 devices trying to figure out what's what.
Right.
Let's not get hoses started again.
Oh, and by the way, side loading does not require hooking up with the cable. you can go to the website, download the APK, directly in the phone's browser. So,
I think, I mean, one other side effect of the Chevron WP7 is that it means one of the things that came with Mango is that developers can release a beta application to the marketplace, and then using people's Windows Live ID, you can allow people to access that app, and it will run for like 100 days or something, and then get removed. But which is great, but it requires developers to collect people's live IDs. It also, the app still goes through a certain level of certification. So what that would put a block on would be devs trying to get, you know, early alpha feedback and things like that before they really kind of lock down their features and lock down their interface. So I think it's definitely got a lot of positives.
And it's only $9 per phone, which is really, really cheap.
yeah. And lastly, an app which is potentially going to be a bit useless with all these phones not coming out without front-facing cameras, but there was the unfortunately beating Skype to the marketplace is the Tango app, which isn't the next version of Windows Phone. It's basically a video calling app that takes advantage of the front-facing camera, which I think probably possibly only the Titan and a couple of the Samsung devices actually have.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it seems to be. I've not had a look at this yet. Obviously, I've not got a front-facing camera.
Yeah, me neither. It kind of passed me by, but I think Jose included it in there. He's obviously starting to get into Windows Phone. I'm slowly working on him. He's starting to contribute stories now. That's it. It's a slippery slope. Jose, did you, Mr. C. Field of Meadow fame?
Yeah, I saw that. The time issue.
Mm.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance because I was in Boston.
Of course, I'll forgive you then.
So, but yeah, I'm definitely gonna try that out. I mean, I had manuals at the time, and the time was right on it. But what I was thinking of doing was instead of manually setting the time, doing the network time,
yeah,
the auto network time, and seeing if that helps. But no, I haven't had a chance because I was traveling.
So, something unexpected, more WebOS news.
Yeah, so, well, it's expectedly unexpected, I guess. Meg Whitman, HP's new CEO, basically saying it's not obvious exactly what to do here. That's in reference to making a decision of what they're going to do with WebOS, whether they're going to sell it off, just squash it, bring it back into development and push forward. But there are some positive quotes in here. For example, if HP decides to keep WebOS, we're going to do it in a very significant way over a multi-year period. Now, when the WebOS, canning of WebOS happened, and we talked about it here on TDL Mobile, one of the things that we mentioned was the fact that HP never really gave WebOS a fair shot, right? The HP touchpad was obviously still in a Palm product. It was in Palm's portfolio lineup before the HP acquisition. And, you have to give a product more than, 15 days in the market? I think Meg Whitman realizes and acknowledges that, saying that, yes, it would be very expensive to continue to develop, to invest in this product, but if we're going to do it, we need to do it right. So that's a positive outlook. So if HP does decide to keep WebOS and bring it back into development, into active development, then I think we'll hopefully see it executed differently than what HP expected out of Palm, from day one. Now the other option, still stands, of course, which is to sell it off. And, if another company acquires it, they can definitely develop it, there as well. And, I think the third option, which nobody really wants to see, is that it gets killed off altogether. The technology is not sold, meaning that HP will close off development. And nobody else will be able to develop a WebOS further, which would be very, very sad, given that I still think WebOS is interface-wise, is still the standout platform out there. It's just, it has no development support, so.
Yeah, I mean, I've had a chance to have a play around with a touchpad, and I must say it's really nice. I mean, WebOS does look really nice. It works well, and it'd be a shame to see it go completely. But it's just HP just can't make their mind up with anything at the moment, can they? They're just taking U-turns left, right, and center.
Yeah, I know they like to talk about on the digital lifestyle that just how fickle HP is when it comes to devices. I mean, they didn't really give Windows Phone Server much of a chance before they gave up and moved on to something else, and they just seem to dip their toe in the water and then decide that it's lukewarm and get out again.
Yeah, run away.
Yeah, it's that mentality of focusing on shareholders rather than customers, and customer experience, the mentality that you need to see profit immediately rather than a long-term investment. It's really that mentality of instant gratification. And it seems like Meg Whitman is more of the mentality of understanding that, sometimes you need to have long-term investment in order to have success. And, understanding that, we were talking about the Verge podcast earlier, right? And if you listen to the content of something like the Verge, that obviously covers a broad spectrum of technology. We focus on mobile here, obviously. But the Verge podcast or the Engadget podcast, This Week in Tech. You know, those podcasts focus on the entire technology landscape. However, if you really take a listen and the topics that are covered on a weekly basis, I want to say a good 80% of them end up being mobile related, whether it's talking about a manufacturer announcing a new phone, whether it's talking about a mobile platform, whether it's talking about 3G or 4G data. It's focused on mobile, and it's obvious that mobile is taking a hold of the industry now. That being the case, I'm sure HP and Meg Whitman acknowledges that they need to have some type of presence in that area in the future. And if that requires long-term investment, which results in short-term loss, but in the long run, you know, you're looking at turning a profit and being present in a market that is obviously taking over, then you definitely have to consider that. So it's good to see that they're not making any brass decisions. And yes, it's probably taking longer than we would like. Obviously, we would like to know as soon as possible, but it's good to see that they're evaluating, you know, all aspects of this decision, because it's ultimately, it doesn't only affect us as geeks and wanting a cool webOS platform and whatnot. You know, it also affects, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of jobs, that, you know, are still there as part of the webOS group. So.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, so that little WebOS tidbit came out. We got some Android news, of course. I think the most relevant that came out today is that Adobe is killing off development for the mobile Flash platform, or the mobile Flash support, which I think has been most prominent on Android. I know for a long time Android was marketing Flash as, you know, a big positive, a big plus, or advantage over iOS, since iOS does not support Flash. And on Android, you know, you have Flash and you can go to Flash websites and get what they call the entire web experience rather than limited one. Well, it looks like Adobe is finally kind of caving in and has said that HTML5 is the future, and that they're no longer going to develop the mobile Flash plugin. Of course, that doesn't mean that it just stops working on handsets that already have it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, certainly the nails are in the coffin, really, for Adobe Flash, in that, you know, Mark sort of said with Windows 8 that the immersive version of Internet Explorer won't support plugins. So you'll still be able to switch to the desktop one if you want to use Flash, but, you know, it just kind of shows the trends, really, that everything's moving to HTML5. I know Adobe said that they're also going to focus on getting apps with embedded Adobe Air, you know, into marketplaces, and that, you know, kind of get around the whole lack of Flash on devices that way. So, but no, I think personally, it's a good thing. You know, I was probably one of the ones vocal on Twitter when the iPad launched, going, "What, you know, yet another device without Flash? You know, what's going on?" But it's clear that the world's moved on, and Flash is just a buggy, horrible bit of software that you don't really want on your PC or any device.
Yeah.
This is what I was saying. You know, a while back we were talking about this whole thing, and I was saying about how, with the playbook and that, when they started doing the advertising campaigns in the UK, they were big into Flash. It was all like, "Oh my God, our device runs Flash. You need to buy it." Blah. And I was just like, "What?" It's like, it's so old hat. No one wants Flash anymore.
Yeah.
I think you're trying to sell me something by saying, it's like going, "Wow, look at this 486 computer. It's brilliant. It runs Flash."
Yeah. Marks have made a good point that when they were explaining their reasonings behind not including Flash with the immersive version of IE10, isn't that it's, you know, when you start adding plugins into web browsers, it's just a drain on battery life, on, you know, drives up CPU usage, whereas something like HTML5, which has been designed to take advantage of hardware acceleration, and I know the latest version of Flash has got that, but
crashes, you know, my computer still, if you use it.
Yeah, I mean, it still struggles. You know, I was trying to stream some stuff in HD using Adobe Flash, and it still jutters sometimes. So it's
yes, needs to go. Really. Get rid of it. HTML5 all the way.
my company's website that uses Flash is the first thing I said when I joined. Was like, right, when are we getting rid of that then?
Yeah.
Moving on, there is a supposedly leaked roadmap for Verizon, which puts the Galaxy Nexus launch in the U.S. The week of November 21st, which essentially would be we have Black Friday after Thanksgiving here in the U.S., which is a huge sales day. That's really what kind of kicks off the holiday shopping season. So we might be seeing a Black Friday launch here in the U.S. But part of the roadmap also unveiled the Zoom 2 and Zoom 2 Media Edition, which would be November 17th. So, I mean, of course, we haven't had official word from Google, Samsung, nor Verizon in regards to the Galaxy Nexus launch here in the U.S. And you lucky fellas will actually be able to get it out in the U.K. pretty soon. Was it the 17th?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah,
another device that I'm really tempted by as well, because I know we've talked about this before in the show, and it's just like ice cream sandwiches. It is a pretty big game changer for Android, in my opinion, anyway.
Yeah,
and the device is lovely as well. So
yeah, yeah. So hopefully we get some confirmation soon. Some other news, the Sony Ericsson Xperia Arc and Arco have become PlayStation certified in Japan. So that means that it'll be able to play the PlayStation games that the Xperia Play and the Tablet S, the Sony Tablet S currently do.
Oh, cool. So is that only in Japan, though?
Only in Japan so far.
Ah.
So we'll see when that expands out to other markets. Speaking of the Arc, while I was in Boston, I got a nifty little notification on my phone letting me know that there was an update. Notification. I was notified that there was an update.
That's
normal. So I went and did the software update. And it included – now, I'm surprised. I actually didn't see posted on this on any blog, and I was traveling. So, I didn't post it on the TDL mobile blog either. But it has some nice little updates. Let me take a look at the version real quick. So it's Android 2.3.4, so – it's not ice cream sandwich. that'd be awesome if it was. It's small little features, the small little visuals. So there's this little kind of flashing light that goes across the bottom menu bar. When you push and hold the power button to power down, you actually have a new option to take a screenshot. So that's really cool. It had some new apps for like DLNA on there. It actually installed a new camera, a 3D camera, so you can take 3D pictures with this phone now.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So small little things like that. What I didn't like is that they took advantage of the update to install a bunch of crapware.
Oh.
So on top of these nifty little apps, I now have Xperia Hotshots, a demo for a game, Wise Pilot, which is I assume some type of nav software, which I don't need because, there's Google Navigation. Update Center, UEFA.com, don't know what that is. The Video Unlimited and Music Unlimited services. What else did they install? They installed... Oh, they installed a swipe installer, which is cool. That means that they're going to be putting swipe on this phone. But I tried to install it and it didn't work. That was weird. Facebook Music and Videos app, Liveware Manager, McAfee Security. I mean, there's tons of stuff here that they installed. What else did they install? Facebook Games and Apps. And then two other apps called Get Apps and Get Games for some, you know, dedicated stores outside of the marketplace. So yeah, a bunch of crap that came along with the software update.
I don't know why they always do that. It's so annoying.
Yeah, ridiculous. Classic Sony though, right?
Just looking at the Galaxy Nexus, it's saying a 1st or 2nd of December release for UK.
Really?
Yeah, I just looked on the Amazon Expansus, and it's saying 1st or 2nd.
Well, I think it was, wasn't it Phones for You that had it for the 17th?
Ah, quite possibly.
Interesting, sorry, you mentioned Swipe. I see the Nokia N9 running Migo received an update, and that included the Swipe keyboard.
Mm.
Seems to be getting more and more popular.
Yep. Swipe is cool. I tried it out for quite some time, and it was cool. I liked it. I enjoyed it. All right. What else do we have here? Oh, and final story.
Yeah, it was the 17th. Sorry, it was 17th in Phones for You.
Okay, cool. finally, Barnes & Noble announced the new Nook color. The new Nook, I think they're calling it the Nook tablet, which looks, design-wise, looks exactly like the Nook color. It's got a dual-core 1 gigahertz processor, a gig of RAM. But I think the big story with this is the content that's going to be built into it. So there's going to be a lot of content inclusion. They have some deals. They're going to have deep, what they're calling deep Netflix integration. It's going to bundle Hulu and Pandora. They're going to be pushing Nook Kids, which is going to have over 1,000 children's picture books. So it's got a lot of content is obviously the focus here, which is interesting given the content integration that the Kindle Fire is going to have with all of Amazon services. That includes, you know, videos and books and music. It says that it supports 1080p. It's not going to be on the screen of the Nook. I highly doubt it's a 1080p screen, but I'm guessing that you're going to be able to, you know, through either mini HDMI or some type of adapter, be able to hook it up to your TV and display 1080p content, or simply play back 1080p content at a downscaled resolution on the screen. It's going to have 16 gigs of storage, expandable. It has an expandable SD card slot, 7-inch screen. What else? I mean, that's pretty much the gist of it.
Yeah, it's kind of taken it to the next level, really, hasn't it? It's, you know, with all that, you know, extra media playback and things, it's sounds pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I guess they'll be next on Microsoft's radar then.
Yeah,
trying to get a license agreement. I did read today that Barnes & Noble have written to I can't remember who it is in the US, but basically. Accusing Microsoft of anti-competitive behavior with all these patents and basically saying that they're insignificant or old, you know, really not relevant. And basically that just Microsoft are really just using it to stifle competition and make Android less attractive. So it should be interesting to actually see if this, for once, this actually comes to court rather than at the moment. So far, companies have just kind of bowed down to pressure and just gone into licensing agreements with Microsoft.
Yeah. Interesting. Pricing on the new Nook tablet, by the way, is going to be $249, and the old Nook color drops to $199. And it's going to be available next week. They took a lot of jabs at the Kindle Fire, so it's obvious that they're positioning it against the Kindle Fire, talking about the processor being, you know, half the speed of the Nook tablet and only having 6 gigs of storage versus 16 and, you know, RAM and ads. They talked about the you know, the subsidized Kindle, saying, you know, do you really want ads? What was the quote? Do you really want to have spend an extra $40 or give your friend an ad-based product? So yeah, that was it. It'll be interesting to see. I don't know what it is. I'm still more drawn to the Kindle Fire.
I'm definitely interested in the Kindle Fire. I think it's just because of the. I have a lot of trust in Amazon. I love the Amazon service. I love shopping with Amazon, and you know, I just think that a tablet from them is going to be nothing but good, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know, we'll see. I mean, I have the also that $50 makes a difference.
Oh yeah, totally.
You know, going from $199 to $249. I have the Kindle Fire pre-ordered, so hopefully I'll be in the first batch of shipments, which is expected to ship next Thursday, so nice. A week from today. So we'll see about
also,
that.
If we record next Thursday, you may well have it.
Hopefully, yeah.
Unfortunately, I'll be out of it next week, so I've got a back to school night, if I use that phrase.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Well, I think that about wraps up the news. You guys have anything else?
No, that's it for me.
Now I've got a Xbox dashboard preview calling me.
Oh, I'm sorry. We have another half hour to go.
Just to clarify for all listeners that Jace didn't actually know it dropped until I told him just before we were about to record, so he's been kind of just sat there itching to get on the call ever since we started.
There is a couple of rules that goes along with the Xbox Dashboard Preview, and that is the first rule is you can't talk about the Xbox Dashboard Preview, and the second rule is you can't talk about the Xbox Dashboard Preview. Seriously, the NDA is like you can't even show it to extended friends and family, which is just ridiculous.
Which is quite funny because all I've read on Twitter in the last sort of couple of hours is everyone talking about the Xbox Dashboard Preview.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure, it always shocks me. Surely Microsoft need the buzz, don't they? That's the whole point, isn't it? Generate buzz and consumer interest. And
I read something on Twitter that somebody posted that pretty much sums it up, is that developer previews and betas these days are just another marketing tool.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even the Mango update, initially you weren't allowed to talk about it, and then Microsoft kind of said, oh, well, that's not really what we meant. We just meant you're not allowed to kind of release the code or anything. It's just, they need to be building up, especially at the moment with Windows 8 still a year away, they need to be building up consumer interest and rather than trying to stifle it. But anyway.
Well, that's what they're doing, isn't it? I mean, you make something a private beta, yeah. Right? You make something all, you know, super secretive. What's the first thing everyone wants to do? They want to talk about it and they want to get the action. It's a great marketing ploy.
It's like back in the 80s in the UK, if you wanted a single to get to number one, just get it banned.
It was trendy to be at number one. Exactly.
Cool.
Yeah. All right, well, I think that about does it for this week. Don't forget you could reach out to us on mobile at thedigitallifestyle.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. I am at Jose Ortiz.
I'm at John Dickinson.
And I'm at Database Jace. We've still got a copy of DVB Link to give away.
Yeah,
yes, we do.
If none of your listeners want DVB Link, come on, we're giving away a prize to people. You know, come on, Jace, tell us a bit about DVB Link, Jace. Come on, sell it to the listeners.
Yeah, I think maybe DVB Link kind of has this tag of being only for media center enthusiasts, but it's really not. I mean, if you've got a TV tuner in a PC that you know you're using for just with the software that gets bundled with it, you can add DVB Link onto your PC, and it basically turns the tuner into a network tuner, which is great if you've got media center, because it means you can kind of use it as a almost like a soft sled extender. But it also, you know, they cover mobile apps on every platform, so you can stream, you know, you can go on holiday and still stream, you know, UK television to wherever you are. You can, the new version's even got inbuilt recording, so you can record shows and then stream the recordings, full access to EPG, electronic program guide. So, you know, it's really a great bit of kit. It's you know, even if you think you might not want it, if you've got a spare tune line around the house, then, you know, contact us, win a copy, and, you know.
Yeah. All you've got to do is write into the show, tell us something interesting, and the copy of DBLink's yours. And, you know, the guys at DBLink are doing really good, like, you know, support of the digital lifestyle, and you know, this is the way they can, they're kind of giving us stuff to give away, so it's awesome. If not, I'll just take it. Like I said last week.
Yeah, exactly. We'll make it so you have to enter this competition in order to qualify for Jose's handset giveaway.
That's it. I'll tell you what, actually, it could be a really good idea. We haven't done an app of the week for a while. So if someone writes into us and gives us a bit of background on your favourite app, what platform it's for, we'll read it out, the first one to write in, and you'll win that.
There we go. That's good. There you go. I like that.
Cool.
I like that. All right. Well, hopefully next week we'll have a winner. We'll have an app of the week from the listeners. Until then, I think we can call it a wrap, and I'll talk to you guys next week.
Okay. Speak to you later.
Yeah, cheers, guys.